If you or a loved one has a hoarding problem, let's work together on a solution.
Thank you so much for stopping by the Hoarding Solution Podcast. I'm excited today to talk with Donald Dotson of Dotson Designs. He's a U.S. Army combat veteran who served for 20 years. He also has been a graphic artist, web designer, and a high school history teacher. So a myriad of experiences and insights that he brings to the work that he does, and that is handmade leather goods that are custom made. And so I'm very excited to be here today to talk about the work that he does and how he actually gets things completed, which is something I also have to work on. So thank you for being here, Donald.
It's my pleasure. As usual, it's nice to be included in conversations that can help other people.
Yes, and I really appreciate the work that you have done. I mean, I can honestly say I have a journal that you created with my logo and the color I wanted, and it's amazing. I love it. So the craftsmanship and the timely delivery is definitely something that I appreciate about the work that you do.
I try my best. The timely delivery depends on the project, which I'm sure will come up in our conversations of how we can struggle with that. But I definitely like making practical things that also look creative or artistic or beautiful, depending on your perspective, because then it's something that's used. Beautiful paintings, nice and inspirational. And I have a lot of respect for fine artists, but anything that art that you can actually use on a daily basis to me is just takes it up a notch. So.
And there's something about that, there's that, like, I believe there's beauty all around us, and I love to have something that is created or reminds me of a person, or like I have a rocking chair that was my grandma's, and it kind of ended up in a box in the garage for a very long time, and it was kind of like, do you put it in the burn pile or do you fix it? And so because I had that sentimental attachment to it, my boyfriend took that pile and he recreated the chair and stained it and made it a beautiful piece of furniture that I can now have in my living room or wherever. But if he hadn't taken the time to put that all back together, it's very unlikely it would have ever happened, you know? But I think sometimes it takes that artist person to be able to take those pieces and make it into something beautiful and useful and something you want to carry on your shoulder or write in regularly. Or, I mean, I know you do like luggage tags and wallets and belts. I mean, I think about the time when we were all in Washington, D.C., and you were ready to measure people for belts that they wanted, you know? And that was just like, wow, look at Donald. He is not afraid to be like, hey, I'm a craftsman, this is what I do, and all right, you want to talk about belts, let's do it. So
I think that's one of those things where if you really love what you do or are passionate about what you do, there is no such thing as selling. It just comes naturally because you're just talking about, you know, what it is that you do. And I don't consider myself an excellent salesman. I just love what I do and I share it in some way.
And I think that is part of that, the sale, because the people tend to shy away from that term, right? Sales or salesmanship or, you know, but really, I think it's true. If you're just passionate about what you're doing, that comes through, and people want to, similar people with passions about whatever they're doing, want to connect with that kind of energy. And yeah. I think that's what's really draws people in, is when you have that energy and that passion about what you're doing, you know, you are naturally attracting that to you. You're not having to be in a hard sell.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, you know, sales is a conversation. As many of my sales professionals have told me, is it's really just more of a conversation about a thing. And I also argue that sales is actually an argument. But not the yell at each other kind of thing. It's like a scholarly argument, you know, here are the benefits and here are the negatives. and you're trying to just make an argument for why you have benefits that they might want. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not a salesperson. It's really just, you have a need, I have a solution. Let's see if they fit. And a lot of art too is about finding solutions. It's problem solving. It's just, you know, not always what we think of, but really it could be what color you're using, what various drawer full of gewgaws you're going to attach to a thing, or, you know, what kind of material you're going to use to make the project that's going to best serve the purposes for whatever somebody needs, which creates a lot of mess.
Well, and like we were talking a little bit before this about, you know, there's this idea that professionals shouldn't be messy. And I just think that's kind of hilarious in a way, because I don't know if I've ever done anything like cooking or painting, or I was doing this feng shui rock thing and I got paint all over me doing that, you know, but there's some kind of therapy, I think, in that, and being able to make some kind of a mess that makes something useful in the end, you know?
One of my probably key moments in the creative process in terms of wrapping my mind around creating things is I took a pottery course. Pottery's, it's freaking mud, you know, it's clay. Okay. But it's mud, it's dirt. I mean, we used to make the little mud pies when I was a little kid, you know? Mm-hmm. So here I am taking a pile of dirt and turning it into a pot or a cup or a mug or a teapot or a sculpture. And but you know, especially in those previous things where it's an actual useful item, I out of literally almost nothing, you know, dirt, and through a very messy process, because that stuff's flying everywhere, I made a thing, you know, and a thing that's of use. So, you know, talk about down and dirty. You know, it really is. But it showed me that, you know, through that combination of these elements, you can make something and create something of use. And you're going to get dirty in that process, whether it's paint, whether it's jewelry fragments, because I used to do fine jewelry, and I'd have silver bits here and there and solder, and you'd be grinding stuff and the pieces are flying up. And even leather, I don't even smell the smell of leather anymore, because it's everywhere. But there's little leather bits on me all the time. If I wear something dark, it looks like I got dandruff or something. or dye, you know, a lot of times my fingers are just different colors. So, but that's part of the process. You make a mess to make a thing of beauty sometimes. Certainly some arts are cleaner than others, but you know, the array of tools, the speed at which you work also drive that. And for some of the more dynamic arts, you're going to be flinging things. You're going to be just grabbing for a tool. Don't find me a carpenter shop that doesn't have an inch of sawdust and or wood shavings on it during the course of a work day. And you're showing me a carpenter that doesn't have anything to do.
right?
Unless they have one of them dust removal systems that's all fancy, but I hate the noise. It's very distracting. So,
well, and like you're talking about with the tools that you use, like you want to reach right now for that scissor or that anvil or whatever it is. Like you want those things in your reach, you know? And right. Having multiples sometimes actually saves time. And you know, I was talking about scissors. I'm like, I probably have like six pair of scissors, you know, one at my desk, one in the kitchen, one in the living room, because I'm lazy. I don't want to go back to the kitchen to get a pair of scissors. So like having tools, I think, around you sometimes, or even like the carpenter shop, we probably have six hammers at least out in our barn, you know, and granted, you might have different weights and you have different purposes for them, but still there's times, or a tape measure. That's one of my pet peeves. Like I want to measure something. And I don't have a tape measure on me. So do I have more than one? Yes.
Well, and you know, there is certainly some efficiency. Maybe it's not as cost effective if we look at it in sheer dollars and cents until we start breaking down how much time are you spent looking for that tool. And, you know, and having, you know, depending on your work area size, a lot of people are not blessed with a large workspace. So a lot of times they have a small amount of area. And if you've got somewhat larger projects, you're getting pieces on tops of pieces, and so your tools tend to get disappeared. But there's that, you know, that funny meme slash graphic we always see of, you know, it's the pie chart and it's, you know, like divided in most of it's one color and it's time spending for the tool I just put down. but, you know, having multiples of those tools is you either know where there's a spare that you can quickly access, or you've got at least two on your deck. I have two cutting knives. You just swap in between. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times, actually, it comes down to the one's very sharp, and as it gets dull, it gets relegated to cutting paper or something until I change out the blade, and then I can flip them. Mm-hmm. But when you're in the middle of something, maybe you don't want to stop. And for somebody that's easily distracted, that stopping can just throw your game off. And before you know it, you're down the rabbit hole of looking something up on the interwebs. So,
and that's really true where, like, and I'm learning about, like, the time chunking thing, where, you know, I'm going to work on this for 15 minutes, or I'm going to, the other day I sat down and said, I had this writing project and I am going to work on this for 1 hour. It doesn't matter what the dog is doing. It doesn't matter what the weather is doing. And I was super proud of myself for sticking with it for 1 hour, you know, because I mean, I've read that it's like, if you get distracted by something, it's like 20 minutes for you to get your attention back to that primary thing you were working on. And so every time you have an interruption, that's a lot of time that is spent like redirecting and refocusing. So
depending on your, and this tied into when I was teaching too, the whole redirection thing, depending on how intricate or in depth it is, it really does. Like, I just know that when I have to shift gears to say I'm doing pricing or quotes, versus designing versus making, those are two different brains. So if I have to switch sometimes, I have to like almost start all over again to say, okay, now where am I at? And then I have to almost self-talk myself through, oh, okay, I'm doing this. So yeah, you've got to be able to follow that. And isn't the dopamine dose wonderful when you finish that required hour of doing exactly what you were doing and focused? I have a small group of friends. We actually have our own little group thread in Messenger. And we just, sometimes it's just memes, but sometimes it's just celebrating those small victories. Like, hey, I had these admin tasks to do and I actually got them done. Because, you know, that's a weakness for me, for example, is admin tasks, even just something as simple as a phone call or an email. Even though it seems like it's simple, it's just nothing. It just does not appeal. I don't get anything from that. You know, I don't get a good positive stimulus. I don't know. It's kind of weird, but so it's harder for me to do. So when I do get those things done, it's like, hey, I got like 5 admin tasks done. Woohoo!
Right. You know? And those small wins really are important to celebrate, because honestly, some days that's all we get is that small win, you know? And yeah. So you have to really enjoy those moments, I think, when you have them, you know, and it's important to have someone to share that with and be like, hey, I did this thing today. And, you know, I think I can speak for myself that I personally don't feel like I should rely on my close family to be the one to celebrate that with me, because honestly, they may not want to hear it.
No, or it's even embarrassing. Hey, I sent an email today.
Woo!
You know, like, for example, filling out your podcast form, which I insisted I do, even though you were like, we could just schedule something. No, I must do that. That was one of the wins I celebrated. And they're like, that's awesome, Donald. I know that's hard for you. And, you know, it just made me feel good. And then you just get on, and maybe I actually did 4 things that day, 4 of those admin tasks, because the one made me feel good about going to the next one. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm manipulating my own brain to do that, but whatever, it gets the job done, you know?
And there's something to be said for, I guess I'm going to call it positive manipulation, like, you know,
or positive reinforcement,
but positive reinforcement where you're like, oh, I did this thing. And it also can boost your confidence. Like, oh, I did this thing so I can do another thing. And feel good about it at the end of your day or the end of that time frame. And I think it's just a really good point, and probably something I've kind of gotten away from, is celebrating those little moments, you know, when they're happening. And when,
especially if it's something that you, as you personally struggle with, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, first world problem, hello, but
right,
you know, we're, you know, as a solopreneur, it's just me. So for the most part, I've got to try to be all those different things. And the overwhelm, much like hoarding folks deal with, can be extreme. So, you know, your admin list starts to get longer and longer. And even though some of these tasks are minuscule, it just becomes this long list of everything that you have to do. And then you just kind of go like, eh, you know, and then nothing gets done.
Right.
So, it, you know, it's and that's where the chunking comes in. That's where they just do one of them, you know, or even sometimes I'm just like, I don't care what you do right now. This is me talking to me. Just do something, anything that is productive, you know, and sometimes that's all it takes to get that get yourself motivated and rolling. And then before you know it, you've accomplished a couple things. It's harder when the tasks are longer term, like a lot of my projects are. This is not something I finish in an hour or even a day. It's days or weeks. So to keep slogging at that, you need those little breaks to go and do something else, or you just need to keep pushing, you know, or even as something as simple as like regularly cleaning up the shop, you know, at some point you have to, but you know, you do the best you can.
And, you know, like I can stand, like I had laundry sitting for 2 days on my couch, and every time I sat down at my computer though, I could see it. And finally I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I can't stand it anymore. And so I find that I get to that kind of that breaking point where I'm like, okay, I've looked at this for 3 days or a week or whatever it is. And that's it. Like that's my tolerance level. And I right. know other people have longer tolerance, but I think it's really important. Like you're saying, like you break down your tasks. So you have this long-term project you're working on, and somehow you have to corral all the things you need. You have to think through the steps. I mean, in my head, I think project management, and one of the things I always want to do is do a spreadsheet. And I'm like, how is it I'm in love with a spreadsheet? Because I'm not really, but it's just in my head, that's how I'm organizing whatever it is that I need to do. And
a friend who loves spreadsheets, I do lots of bullets, lots mm-hmm. of bullets, you know, and that's how I get through my day. Is there's little checks, and I do sort of like a bullet journal concept where I make a little square for each task. And depending on how much completion happens, I can actually divide that up into thirds or quarters because it's a square. And then I can see the progress. And even though it's just one little quarter of that, it feels good and yay, you know.
But, and I think it's something we've lost with technology, is there is something very satisfying about checking something off. Like you completed it, you did it. And I mean, I'm a list maker. I have multicolored pens. Like, and there's some days when you think, did I do anything today? And then you can look at your journal and say, yeah, I did this, this, and this. And so, because sometimes I'll look at my calendar, because I have the digital calendar, right? But I've had that dump on me. So I also have a written calendar, and I can look at that and say, yeah, I actually did 3 things today. Or, you know, I finished that one task that's been bugging me all week, you know, and being able to just, I think, somehow affirm that we did something, especially if we work on our own a lot, which a lot of people do. Like, how do I confirm that I actually did something useful today? And I think that is one way for people to be able to see that, especially if you're easily distracted or that decision making is difficult. And I totally get that overwhelm, because I'm not sure I've ever talked to a person who's either trying to organize their workspace or having a clutter issue, or they're trying to get that last room done before they have the real estate agent come through for photos. The word overwhelm comes up so much for people, that, and people feel this sense of shame or guilt or put such a negative thing on it. But the truth is we all have some version of overwhelm in our lives. And I think naturalizing that and helping people, or neutralizing it maybe, and saying, look, it's not, this doesn't make you a bad person. This is normal for most of us. We have some kind of overwhelm that we're dealing with in our lives.
Well, we've been, especially our generation, have been brought up to see the TV version of the perfect family, which is very neat and orderly. We never saw a place that was junky. You never saw a place that was cluttered. That just was not, for a lot of reasons. One, it's very distracting to watch, but you know, we were presented with the perfect situation, and that just doesn't really exist now, or at least not for a very long time. I mean, there's times I get my everything really cleaned up, and I feel really good about that. But you know, that only lasts for so long, because when you actually work on stuff, stuff piles up. And if I take the time to put certain things away, it slows the process down. So you have to acknowledge that there's going to be a mess, but maybe that mess is just in this one corner. All my scrap leather goes there, and then eventually I'll put that away or throw it out, or whatever. If it's going to throw out, I throw it in the trash can immediately. But sometimes, being, you know, of a mind that, you know, even a square of leather this big, I can make something out of, it creates a lot of material, you know, that you're like, oh, I can make something from that, which is its own dilemma. because creative folks especially see the potential in almost anything. So it makes it, we get attached to things materially, just like the rocking chair. And then that adds into the head clutter and the actual physical clutter in your so.
And that's a really good point, especially as crafts folks and artisans. And like, I mean, I like, this is kind of a silly example, but so sometimes, like, I can get a shoulder pain, right? And so you can put two tennis balls in a sock and kind of use that to kind of manipulate that muscle. And so late recently I found this, I had a sock that had a hole, and I personally can't stand a hole in my sock, yet I could see the purpose for changing out the sock on my tennis balls. And I know that sounds really weird, but that's what I did. And I was like, okay, well, this is a darker color and it's fine for that purpose, you know? But other times I would just pitch it because I didn't need it, you know? And I think there's sometimes a fine line between what you see the potential is and whether or not I'm ever going to get to it, you know? And that's where I sit, where like, I have a project, clearly I'm not a leather crafts person, but like at Christmas time, I finished an ornament, a little cloth ornament with a little doohickey on it. And I was so proud of myself to give that gift away that I actually finished a project. But it came from a friend that does that type of work, that art. She had nice space to work in. And I think there's something to be said for having this space to actually do the work, you know? And
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the other thing that, you know, I have the advantage of, that literally I can close the door. Well, in my case, leave the building, because mm-hmm. I have a little workshop outside. But I can leave it messy and it's okay. But if you're working on your kitchen table or your dining room table or in part of your dining room, I mean, I know people that they'll do work while they're watching TV at night after, mm-hmm. you know, an entrepreneur type, and you've got to clean that mess up. So that is also very distracting or challenging. So, you know, it's an advantage, but you're managing those workspaces. So even if you do have that dedicated corner of a whatever, is managing that so that you can continue to use it to its best and it doesn't start to take over. Because especially if you do, like, say, sewing or some of the bigger projects that a carpentry, you know, it gets big. Mm-hmm. quickly, because you might be painting something and it's got to dry, and it, you start stacking things, and before you know it, you start taking over. you know, and it, you know, that's a matter of how do you pause your work in a way that is not disruptive. I because I have so many projects going at a time, I have at least a dozen. So I have a lot of, like, I use the Chewy, you know, the pet food a lot of the cans come in this sort of like a box top about yay long. And I just keep a lot of the things are small enough to fit in there and they're flat. And I just put them in that. And then I just stack those up and those fit very nicely in a corner. So I know, and I cannot actually tell a lot of times I labeled them. So I can just look over and say, oh, there's, that's the blue purse I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And I can, if I'm in a position where I'm waiting on a part, I'm deciding what to do because I'm stuck, or I'm waiting to hear back from a client or God knows what, or I put it off because I'm a putz. but the bottom line is it allows that to not overcome the whole area because then you can't work. So, but that's about having a process, you know, and it's critical that you have that.
And one that works for you, you know, what works the best for you, whether it's the type of work you do or if you have any kind of physical mobility issue, like it may not make sense for you to do what, you know, the next door neighbor's doing, but you might be able to pull bits and pieces of what they're doing and make it accessible for you in your space. And I think sometimes we forget that it's okay to make our systems work for us. And even in organizing, I don't recommend run out and go buy a closet organizer or lots of totes, or like you need to figure out what you've got, what you're keeping, and then you might be able to work within what you've already got. Or if you like a certain way you have something organized or a certain brand or type of little organizer thing, just get more of it. Like you don't have to reinvent everything to satisfy someone else.
And you know, determine on the lifespan of a project, or more importantly, the lifespan of the materials you use. Mm-hmm. I don't store certain things because they don't last long enough in my shop to even require storage.
Right.
I'll go through them that quickly. Other things that you might refer to use only on occasion, well, then you're going to need a different kind of storage because you might only use it every month. So then you need something that stores that material in a different way. It can be further out of the way until you know you need it. Mm-hmm. And then again, it, like with the way I do things, I collect all the pieces parts into a smaller container thing. Okay. And then all those things are kept together for the duration of the project when possible. Even when I made jewelry, I had little trays and I would keep mm-hmm. the gemstones and the little bits of silver and the, because as I would make a component, I would stick it in there. So, you know, that kind of degree of compartmentalization then makes it very easy to just grab the one thing as well. Mm-hmm. And it makes for a smaller footprint depending on what you're working on. Carpentry, it's a little harder because they're just a larger scale, at least the things I have made. But you know, and that even comes to kind of tools. I know one guy I knew actually had a tool tote for every type of work he would do. So if he was doing muffler repair, he had a tool tote just for muffler repair. Mm. If he was doing body work, he had a tool tote just for that. If he was doing the upholstery, he had, so he just grabbed the box he needed just for that thing. And all the specific tools were there for that. But again, you have to work with whatever you're doing. I do this all day. Most people weekend thing. So manage it, you know.
Well, and I think that's another part too, like when you do this as your work that you do versus a hobby or something that you're ramping up to do more. I mean, I think it really does depend on, you know, what exactly you are, where you're headed with it, you know. Right. And but I love the idea of like the box top or just something like that where it's easy to compile everything and stack it and just kind of keep your space clear, but also you know where your stuff is and you're not spending your time trying to reassemble something because, you know, you didn't have it all collected together. And
well, it makes, like if you have small children, you have furry creatures that like to play with you.
Yes.
that can be a thing too. You can't leave little gemstones out because I know what cats are like, you know,
right.
Cats are assholes. So they're going to just knock that shit over. And then you're like looking for a $100 gemstone on the floor somewhere. I've been there, done that, not fun. So, you know, you need to also take that in consideration. Sometimes it's just as simple as throwing a sheet over it and that might work. But, you know, again, it has to work what's best for you. But creating a system that works for you. And I do find that, you know, part of the whole thing is avoiding the imminent clutter. And one of the ways is just have a system to put stuff someplace. So if I know that I'm going to have leather scrap, I put it at the corner of the desk, which may not sound like a long-term solution, but at least it gets it out of the way, but it's all centralized. So that might, you know, have to do with the hardware you use or whatever things you're working with. Having a place for it to go helps you, especially if you're trying to work fast. You can then just clean up as you go. It's a lot easier if it's just, oh, I'm just going to dart over here and put this in this drawer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or if you're looking for a thing because you've probably lost the buckle that you already set up for that for some reason, I don't know, then you know where to get another one. And it's just really about creating those systems. I am not a neat person. I have carefully positioned the camera to avoid the most of my mess. But, you know, I have to, it still has to work for me, and I still have to be able to be productive where I'm not chasing stuff and having them shift piles to do work.
And there's something really valid about positioning the camera the correct way, because like I have different spots I could sit, but what's the best space for me right now? You know, what's the least amount of work I have to do to look presentable, you know, to have my background look presentable. And it's not because you're lazy. It's because you want to present the best way that you possibly can in that moment. And that's where, I mean, people will say, oh, do you want to hop on a call? I'm like, wait, what kind of call are we talking about? Are we Zooming? Are we phone? Are we an audio on? Like, what are we doing here? And I think some people think it's kind of funny, but I'm like, well, if I'm on my phone and I'm outside, nobody cares. But if I need to be recording and I need to be doing this stuff, then I need to know that ahead of time so I can be somewhat prepared or presentable or whatever. And if you're working in a small space or you're living in a small space, you know, you have to be able to adapt sometimes to whatever that situation is that you're in. And I think like if you don't have a designated workspace that you can just completely leave as you will, then that makes more challenges, you know. And that's why it's so important to have a system. And even I've used like small clear totes because, you know, I can see what's in there, I can label it, but it also keeps my cat from, so I won't say he doesn't knock it over, it just contains all the stuff.
I'm a big fan of clear totes because I like to be able to see what's in them. And you know, no matter how you mark stuff, you may not, you know, and the wife has the holiday stuff and inevitably there's something in there that doesn't belong, or the tub you thought was Christmas was not Christmas. But when you can see inside of a tote or a container, then you could instantly look and see what's in there generally. And you know what's there, and it makes it easier. You're not going through so many things, because part of what slows us down to either cleaning up, putting stuff away, or starting something, the converse of that, is if it's too hard to do. Mm-hmm. So you've got to remove every barrier possible to make things as streamlined as possible. I know it's in many cases somebody's hobby or it's just their freaking house and this is how they do it, but you have to think in terms of efficiency and ergonomics and all that stuff that like some CEO of a multi-million-dollar company would hire somebody to do. Because the more efficient you can be, the more effective and easier it is to do stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying you have to do time studies or anything like that, but, you know, something as simple as having clear little totes that you can see what's inside of, that you can then further put other stuff inside of, and then you can kind of, you know, arrange your stuff. You know, that's just valuable. You know, we all have that junk drawer in the kitchen that's just filled with crap that only halfway is open, that's got batteries, a hammer, You know, 2000 zip ties, not the zip ties, the twisty ties, and you know, everything in there, right? And it just becomes worse. You know, how many batteries do you buy again because you couldn't find them in that drawer? Mm-hmm. You know, or how many of anything? And it's not dissimilar to what I call the ADD tax, which is where you forget about things, whether it's an item and where you put it, or it's a deadline that you have to, something you have to do, the whole executive dysfunction, I can't do admin task things. And I end up paying more for something because either I buy it again or because I have to pay, like there was a early discount. And if I'd signed up earlier with the same information that I had, it's not like I had to decide whether to go or not. I would have saved $25 or I would have saved whatever, but no, I'm now late. So I'm now paying extra because I can't get my crap together. But anything you can do to help make it more, you know, even and flow better is helpful. It's maybe, you know, even like my dad, he just collects stuff. Okay. He's not really a hoarder, but he just collects everything. Mm-hmm. And we live in an old house, so it's always antiques and these things, but he puts like with like. So if I look at the top of the one cabinet, I can see there's a bunch of little screws of the same exact type that he found somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they're in his pocket. And as he walks in, he just puts them there. Or it's, you know, nail punches or whatever it is, but he just starts putting them all the same. So they're just, it's an organization, it's clutter, but it's organized clutter. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the Japanese style things where you'll see a whole top filled, not that condo crap. This is where you'll see a whole bunch of different or same items just in different things. Like here's 50 different little Zen Buddha statues all mm-hmm. arranged, you know, nicely. And he does this. And if he hadn't, it would just be out of control and everywhere, and it would be a problem. So, because, you know, he's suffering with some mobility issues too. So it's like the paths have to be cleared and you have to be cognizant of all those things. And I'm not going to get him to change at 88. So it's managing as opposed to, you know, changing. And I think that's a key thing too, is we've got to manage the behaviors, not necessarily always change them. At least that's my opinion, but I'm no expert on that stuff.
But I think it's really true is managing the behaviors and the circumstance that you're in, because I do not see that one size fits all solution. I see, like, if someone has a mobility issue, you want to make sure they're able to access all their spaces without having to grab onto a box or a pile. If they're using a cane or a walker or anything like that, and it could even be a short-term thing, like you're recovering from surgery or something, and you just need to make sure that you can access all that easily and not have it become some kind of avalanche risk or fall risk, because especially for older folks, that's a big concern, that fall risk. So
yeah.
When you're talking with your parent, which can often be, I find, one of the most challenging pieces of this, is to come at it from a safety perspective, just, you know, I'm not trying to change your entire life here. I'm just trying to make sure it's safe for you in this moment. And I think that's a really important part of conversations, even if it's your parent or your spouse or someone you live with or roommates. Like, I think coming at it from a less attacking standpoint, which is often what happens, is just learning to not do it that way, learning to navigate it through a different lens, just so you're keeping them safe.
I think you have to think of what the goal is and approach it that way. So anybody that follows me knows I do have my dad days. One day a week, I go to my dad's and I help him. Basically, it's funny. It's like I do the chores I used to do as a teenager, but all over again. So I like get wood and help him with stuff. We go out to lunch, but you know, as he's starting to struggle with some things, I realize that I have to think of what does he want? And what do I want for him? And, you know, a lot of, I've sort of come up with, I want you to be safe. I want you to be happy as possible. And, you know, those are the things I base that on. And in order for you to be happy, i.e. stay in your home, then it has to be safe. So, you know, you kind of look at those kind of things, and it's a little bit of a trade-off. But, you know, I think a discussion in the right tone and the right way will help do that. You can't be, they're not your child, even though you feel sometimes like they are. But you've got to, and especially if they're male, you've got to put the information out there and just sort of let it, just like you slide it across the table and just leave it there and then talk about the coffee or something else. And then it'll sink in, because it was that way recently with my dad for a particular subject. And I said, you should probably do this. Here's why. Mm-hmm. And so what are we doing today? You know, and just leave it there. And then sure enough, he took action on what I had suggested. Because, you know, and granted, it's not, I'm not a very strong force of will in coming at him that way, because he's going to push back. Everybody will, because
right,
they're a certain age where they don't want to, you can't tell me what to do, you know?
Well, and that's the thing, is it's like you have to look at their autonomy, but I also understand people wanting to age in place and stay in their home. And, you know, like I get that, and making it the best it can be so they can, I think, is often where we butt heads. I've had it recently with my own mom, looking at the situation and be like, look, it's not, I'm doing it because I care and I love you. It's not because I'm trying to tick you off. You know, I'm trying to do it because XYZ is happening right now. And therefore we need to talk about this differently. But you're right about just kind of dropping the seed, dropping the hint. Here's the article, here's a thing. And you then just kind
sometimes of... they see you struggling with the environment that they're living in. And that lets them know that this is maybe not, they're so used to it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I think about what my dad's, you know, dealing with, and it's not a particular, there's lots of steps. It's really not great for him. Mm-hmm. I can't see him living somewhere else though, because it's, you know, lots of details, but the bottom line is, but he doesn't think in that. He's lived in this house for God knows how many, almost my whole life, mm-hmm. and I'm 54. So, you know, he's lived there that long. So it's normal, even though it's potentially perilous. So it's, but sometimes I'm helping him, but I'm struggling because I'm trying to navigate this space or something. And then he realizes that, you know, we gotta look at that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think earlier we talked about attachment, you know, and you have to start to help nurture this idea of how useful is this thing and how important is it for you now? Mm-hmm. Because at say 88, that project that you've got to learn a whole skill to do may not be as valid as it is for say somebody my age.
Right.
You know? So I've got stained glass bits tucked away somewhere for when I learn how to do stained glass. But it's okay, because it's relatively small footprint and I've got time, you know, mm-hmm. at 88, maybe not so much.
Well, and actually stained glass is something I would like to do again. I did that way back when in high school, and I have very rudimentary skills at this point, but I would say I still have time. I'm, you know, middle-aged, we'll say. And, you know, so I feel like there's still time, but other projects, especially when I moved, I was like, I am never going to sew this. It is never going to happen. So I just...
Moving is a great cleaner. And yeah. Having a big, like, dumpster size or a yard size dumpster is incredibly helpful, because you can just throw that shit out.
Yeah.
you know, because... I realized that some of the stuff I was saving is just like, this is just silly. You know, for me to move it from one house to even a similarly sized house was just there. What you had to sit there and start to think, like, does it make sense for me to keep this thing? And I'm not going to get a chance to sell it. I, you know, or whatever you thought you were going to do with it. So you really need to then consider that. And if it bothers you to just throw it out, then find somebody who may want it, you know, because we start creating all these temporary repositories of
mm-hmm.
decisions, is what they are. They're these decisions that are sitting there on a pile because you haven't decided what you're going to do with it, or you think you're going to sell it, or you think you're going to start it, or you think you're going to give it to somebody. Well, just do one or the other and make it happen. Lots of talk, execution, I'm not so good at that.
But I think it's valuable to look at that because, I mean, I had lived in my house for like 20 years. And yeah, periodically I had purged and got rid of stuff and painted and done other things. So I got rid of things, but I still had it, this pile of stuff at the end where I was just like, I don't want to look at it again. I don't want to deal with it in my new location. So, okay, it's either free or, yeah, I ended up hauling some stuff to the dump because I was like, I don't want to look at it anymore. And I've given away as much as I possibly can with free this and free that. And, you know, I had someone, I worked with a real estate agent and she had a crew that came in and said, okay, these things we'll remove and we'll donate them somewhere. Great. Like, it's off my plate. I don't have to deal with it. And there's something to be said for having that resource, a dumpster, someone who can haul it. Like, there is something to be said for having that resource at the time you need it so that you can simplify your life, which having a system, having all the things that we talked about is one of the ways to actually do that, you know, to simplify what you're doing and make your life a little easier. And, you know, so I think it's really valuable to figure out what that is and do that thing, even though it might be out of your comfort zone or not something you'd normally do. Like, it's still really valuable to consider, what's my option given this situation?
Well, and I think, you know, you don't have to move to apply that mindset. You don't have to create a craft space to have that mindset. It can, you can pull that into every, there's just not as much of a need perhaps, because it's just, you know, it's a mindset shift. In the case of a move, or in case of a new space, or in the case of a disability or something, you're forced to, but you could still apply that to solve the problem, whether it's reorganizing the space so it works better for you. I mean, I've seen people have to do this when they just change. A lot of people that are into crafts, they hop around. So they're doing stained glass, and then a year later, they're doing something different. Well, you got to retool. You got to reset things up because it's maybe not going to work for you as it had before. Maybe you do a lot of poundy things as opposed to draw things, and it's just a different workspace. It's everything, you know? But you can still take those concepts and apply them to all the different problem solving situations that you might have to encounter, you know, especially centered around cleaning up a space or organizing a space or helping somebody else do that. A friend of mine, I think it's called a body double, but basically they had to clean up their clothing because they didn't fit stuff and it was too hard for them to do that. Well, they just had somebody come over and just help them with it. And really, they didn't do much, but they, because they were there to help you do that, they felt obliged to finish the task. So because, you know, they're there and they're like, well, I'm making time for this person to come over and help me, I better do it. And, you know, they might have been drinking wine and having fun, but the bottom line is the stuff got done. I've even seen this do for distance working. I'll actually, on Saturdays, sometimes I will get on Skype with two of my other maker friends and we'll literally have Skype on in the shop working, maybe not even interacting much, but they're there and you're kind of stuck because they're there and you don't want to leave.
You're accountable. But, you know, it's accountability, you know, and it is actually,
but you can also go and like, do you think this looks good? And you know, hold up what you're looking on or send them pictures. And that's another actual Facebook Messenger thread that I keep. And we just constantly show what we're working on. And then we get the, hey, that's cool. Or that's awesome. Or that color looks off. You know, I mean, you know, we try to create that honesty, but support. And, you know, that, again, that creates some degree of accountability, but it also creates that safe space to share and talk about whatever.
And I think that's really valuable given some of the restrictions lately and having those connecting points. I mean, I had a conversation with a friend last week. She lives in New York and we talked before, but it had been a long time since we'd chatted. And it was just really great to catch up on a Zoom call for an hour, you know? And I think it's important to have those connections, you know, and have someone you can bounce things off of. And the accountability piece is really valuable no matter what you're working on.
Especially if you're comfortable co-working, mm-hmm. where essentially you're both kind of doing the stuff maybe, so that the attention isn't solidly on. Now, granted, if this is somebody you're catching up on, you're maybe not going to do that. But I have several people who they actually call me on the phone, which I know that's a rare thing these days. And by the way, I do not like it when people just call me, but I have a couple people who call me and I'll be working. I'll be in here doing stuff. And as long as it's not uber noisy, they don't care either because they're doing the same thing.
Right.
And I can be more effective when I'm not typing or texting somebody.
Exactly.
And, but yet you get to spend that time with them or talk about what's on your mind. I guess there was a time when we used to sit and talk on the phone for an hour, you know, and I don't know what that's like anymore, except for with the exception of the occasional podcast or a Zoom call. It's so rare in my world anyway. But then I'm not one of those movers and shakers who always has to be in somebody's, you know, face.
Well, and I think the phone thing, like I've recently kind of re-embraced that idea, especially with some of the older folks in my life and stuff where I'm like, oh, you know, this was actually pretty cool. Like I learned about, you know, the property where I grew up, or I learned about some trip they took or something. And so I think there's something to be said for connecting with our older generation in a way that they're comfortable with, instead of, hey, you need to text me or you need to Zoom or what, like, what the? Zoom what? That's on a camera lens. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. For my dad, this would be totally, he doesn't even own a computer. He has no digital footprint whatsoever. So this would be an impossibility for him. So he rudimentarily texts, and then he got a new phone and now he can't text again because he's trying to figure it out.
I'm happy
But you know, occasionally he'll just call me and say, hey, can you come over on Wednesday? Like I always do.
Yeah.
You know, but that's okay too. You know, I just don't like the random phone call. Like I'm fine talking to people. I just want a heads up, so I'm not quietly enjoying my morning coffee,
right?
Eating or whatever. It's just, you know, you need to give me a heads up here.
And it's funny because I can recall even as a kid, we had a phone, right, plugged into the wall. And if it was dinner time, you weren't answering the phone. Like that was not happening.
Nope.
And I'm kind of that way even now. Like I'm busy. You know, the phone exists for my convenience. And I realize now that's an attitude I've really adopted from my dad, where he's like, I'm busy. I'm focused on the people in front of me. That's what I'm doing right now. And that's okay, you know, and I think that's where, at least for me, being older, where some of that comes from. Like, I'm fine to talk to people, I'm fine to get on a call or whatever, but yeah, I think I want a little bit of notice type of thing. Well, I gotta be in the right frame of mind.
And maybe you want to also be aware of what we're going to talk about.
Right.
Because if you just want to know, where did you get that leather dyed on? That's a simple text.
Text
and I'll respond, and I can respond while I'm eating because we're watching TV while we do, you know, we watch Jeopardy right. And eat the thing. But but if you've got something you need to talk about, that's not a good time, you know.
Right.
So or maybe honestly, I can't deal with your problem right now. Like I know you have a problem that you're trying to deal with that you can't deal with, but I don't need that emotional baggage either. And I know it sometimes it seems a little, you know, self-centered, but I can't help you if you're weighing me down with all your problems. So I might need to be in a headspace for that. You know, if you're going to say I need to unload a vent about something, that's fine. And maybe if it's just, I just sit there and go, that's okay. Maybe that's all you need, but I'm not very good at that. I always like to have solutions, but I guess the short thing is sometimes you're not in the headspace for that. You've got a bunch of work to do, or you've got a call coming up and you want to prep for it, and the last thing you need to do is have that. Back in the day, I know people that used to wait till they got pissed off to make collections calls, so that they could be more aggressive with somebody who hasn't paid. You know, and as somebody who's not very confrontational, I can understand that.
Well, I can relate to that. And, you know, that's a really key point that you're mentioning about your own self-care. Like, am I in the right space to deal with this? Because we tend to overgive, I think, sometimes. And it's okay to look at, can I handle this right now? And I think it's really valuable to be that self-aware, to know whether or not that's something you can handle. And, you know, and it has to do with boundaries, and that no is a complete sentence sometimes. And, you know, I think it's really key to learn those things about ourselves. That way we aren't depleting our souls completely, you know, in the giving to others. So I think it's really important to be aware of that.
We've all had those conversations where we feel drained after we're done, and not from a productive, creative, entrepreneurial sense, like you guys just brain, you know, just the thing where you figure stuff out, brain stuff. Word flew out of my mind, but you know, came up with all these great ideas, right?
Mastermind.
It's not like that. It's where they just are just
dumping.
Oh my God, here's my life. It's like one of those letters you get from, you know, a relative that tells you what their whole life is, usually around Christmas time, and you're just, oh my God, you know. But at least it's in a, you know, Reader's Digest form. But you know, to have that ongoing type of thing, it just starts to become draining. And when you start to go and see them either in a text or a message or a missed call, and you're like, ugh, you know, that's not that's not a good sign. It's showing you that they're pushing your boundary, or that, you know, you might be at a weak point yourself, or it just might be that you're not getting anything out of that, you know, and not everything is transactional, but needs to be some balance.
Right. And I think that's part of the biggest thing, is finding that balance in that. Well, I kind of think of it as juggling. Like, I have balance so I can juggle well, you know?
Right. Well, and I also feel that, like, balance is overused. You never are directly in the center, because if you are, then you're really not going anywhere, are you?
Right.
You know, so a lot of times you need to be pushing towards one thing more than those other things. And those other things are going to suffer a little bit. You know, if you imagine that sort of, not a seesaw, but a round sphere. Mm-hmm. So you've got work, you've got family, you've got spiritual, you've got fitness, and anytime you move towards that one thing, all those other things are going to, everything shifts. Mm-hmm. It's just how time works, because we're only one being. We can't do all those things at once. So now sometimes that center of gravity shifts, you know, if you imagine that ball underneath that disc. But you, if you're always just in the center, then you don't really make any progress. You know, you're just sort of in stasis. At least that's my theory.
I like that theory.
It was one of my Monday morning news.
Oh, that's right. It's a Monday, isn't it? We're doing good for a Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I've accomplished a thing or two. I respond to a email or two, and I podcast. Who knows what I'll do? Maybe I'll even make a Facebook post. Woohoo!
Well, I love that we're off and running, and I appreciate you taking the time to come and talk with us and share your perspective. And I know that it's going to help someone who struggles with, you know, their projects and staying organized. And I hope it encourages someone to look at their space and what it can do, you know, how they can make it work best for them. And I think
you need to learn to manipulate time and space, i.e. your time and space, so that it works for you. And let's not get too focused on the Architectural Digest pictures of things, or, you know, home and garden and stuff, or the things you see on TV, because that's not reality. I mean, in any stretch of the imagination.
Very true.
Because, you know, that stuff was staged, you know. You the first time you ever see your home, it's staged. It's either the way that the previous owners have it all set up, all clean, so that somebody can come and visit it, or it's actually literally staged like they do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a lived in space. And, you know, lived in space is not going to necessarily look like a or that hypothetical Marie Kondo version of things.
Exactly.
One of the things I've often tell people is I occasionally post pictures of my very messy work table. And some people were like, how can you work in that? Like, the point is, I'm working. All right. This is right? a working shop. That is a working shop. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to pretend that it's all neat and orderly. This is what it looks like to work in a real shop. And, you know, maybe at the end of the day, theoretically, it would get cleaned up. Not happening. But, you know, let's give ourselves a little bit of grace, because I think sometimes we beat ourselves up too much. I think we referenced this earlier, is, you know, and we try to create that picture perfect thing when it doesn't exist. Let's make it workable. Let's make it safe. Let's make it efficient. And so we don't, you know, we can achieve whatever goals we want to do.
Exactly. And I really think that's a valuable perspective that people need to hear, that there is, it doesn't need to be picture perfect. It needs to be functional to get our stuff done. And that's a great point. So how do people get a hold of you? What's the best way that people can reach you?
Well, obviously I'm not, you know, an organizational consultant yet. Again, if they would look at my place, they'd say, yeah, hell no. So I have a website, www.dodson-designs, so dodsondesigns.com. And then on Facebook and Instagram, I'm Dr. Dodson Designs. So like Dr. Dodson, but I'm not a doctor unless I'm a doctor of leather.
Doctor of leather. Well, thank you for being here and for sharing with us. And I encourage people to check out your website and to figure out what kind of things that you can create for them, because I think there's just some beautiful things coming out of your shop. So I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the chance to get on and share something that I find useful in my everyday life. And it leads to those projects, you know, eventually getting done. But one of my biggest things is I just love sharing the spirit of creativity and making something. Mm-hmm. So if I can help facilitate that by just letting people know that, you know, you can create a workspace that works for you, you know, then that's great too.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's exactly it, finding what works for you. So thanks again for being here and talking with us today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
If you or a loved one has a hoarding problem, let's work together on a solution.